This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Z Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by Doctors Hospital, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Royal Star Assurance, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, and the Water and Sewage Corporation.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, host. So glad you join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where I am hearing myself echoed in my, maybe we'll get rid of that. So happy you joined us today as we continue our partnership with Doctors Hospital toward giving you health information to help you preserve, in some instances, recover your health. We've had some wonderful sessions so far. Thank you for those of you who have said so and been grateful for the information you've been receiving. But I have to tell you what, I'm excited today, because I think that, like all the other sessions, this part of it is so very important as well, because we've dealt with the physical aspects of health over the last several days, but now we're going to delve into mental health and wellness. And I'm going to introduce my guest in a little while, who's going to help us deal with that. But if you want to give us a call today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. My mother's listening to us by way of Cable Bahamas, channel 969, and you can do the same. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. I know that there's a lot going on in the country. I know that the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance gave a budget communication at the mid-year. And I know that he said some things that I'm sure you want to probably discuss or have me comment on. It's going to happen, just not this week. It's going to happen next week. And I can assure you, I have some thoughts and some stuff that I've been listening to, but not a worries. We are going to be looking at mental health and wellness with Dr. Delano Roll, courtesy of Doctors Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Roll. Well, I see Dr. Roll in the room. Maybe your mic is muted, sir. All right. We're waiting for Dr. Respond. He's in the room. maybe if Vadenia is listening, she can help us reach out to Doc and find out if he has some technical difficulty. In the meantime, let me say that this issue of mental wellness and health has intrigued me for a long while. I have honestly really thought about what it means, how to assess if you have it or don't have it. What do you do if you don't have it? What do you do if you have it and to maintain it? Ultimately, we interact with the world largely through our minds. Even those of us who call ourselves spiritual Christians, if we examine the nature of our expressions of spirituality and Christianity, That comes largely through the exercise of our minds. On that faculty, as the Bible tells those of us who subscribe to it, as a man, and if you want to be politically correct, as a person thinketh in his heart, her heart, so he, she, right? And so how we think, how we feel, how we behave, all turns on our mental health or affects our mental health. And so we spend a lot of time getting information on how do you maintain your physical health. So we are told, eat well, exercise, avoid this, avoid that. We ask, how do you get successful in life, in your career? We're told, you know, get an education, continue to upgrade your skill set, go and attend seminars, read, etc. We're told to do those things. Even we ask, how do you get to heaven? And we're told, confess Jesus Christ as Lord, read your Bible, go to church with regularity, worship, share the gospel. So we're told these things, right? You know, whether you subscribe to the book, we're told. And then the thing that controls essentially all of that, the mind, you ask the typical person, how do you manage your mental health? And can they tell you, oh, you have to do this, do the next? No, we cannot.
Yes, I mean.
Dr. Roll, welcome.
How you doing, Mr. Lang? How are you?
I was trying to provide my audience with a little bit of context to my... I told them I'm excited. I really am. I have to tell you, I'm exaggerating because I have a huge interest in this area.
Yes,
because quite frankly, I feel so like... You know, and you could help me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Most of us, if we have like a gnawing physical pain...
Uh-huh.
We say something is wrong.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I need to either go to the doctor or try to find some way to deal with this gnawing physical pain.
Right.
Yet I find people have ruminations. Like they got things going on in their minds on a day-to-day basis that doesn't feel right. And we don't think something is wrong.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So can I ask you first, what's your background in terms of, you know, your...
Okay, so like you said, my name is Dr. Delano Roll, and my background is in psychology. I was trained in the UK. I did my undergrad at the University of Southampton. I did my master's at the University of Hertfordshire in London, in the United Kingdom. And then I completed my doctorate degree in psychology in the United States at California Southern University. I am trained in grief management, as well as in trauma, certified trauma professional. And I'm also certified as a military clinical counselor.
Wow.
And so I've been in the field for 5 years.
Okay.
And yes, and I worked very closely in practice, but I also work along with the team at Doctors Hospital of Bahamas.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for making time out for us. I know you're busy, but we appreciate
yes,
it. And honestly, I had designated 2 days for this. Not that you were going to do 2 days necessarily, but I had designated it because I feel like it's so important, right? But
yes,
we made an adjustment till tomorrow. But I'm only putting this out there. Whenever you want to come back, talk. Feel free, because trust me, I think we got to talk. Okay.
Yes,
so let me start with this. Like I said, you know, people have these physical ailments and they think, I got to go do something about this. This can't be right. They see some festering on their hand or foot and they think, I got to go get this checked out. But yet I find that they're in a state of sadness, they're in a state of anxiety with great regularity, and they're not, you know, we don't think maybe something is wrong. Can you tell us what mental wellness is, first of all?
Okay, so when we talk about mental wellness, and thank you for that question, mental wellness basically refers to our emotional, our psychological, and our social well-being. It affects the way that we think, the way that we feel and the way that we behave. Mm-hmm. And it also helps to determine how we handle stress, how we relate to others, and how we also make choices in our lives. So mental wellness is very important. In fact, in some arenas, some persons use the term mental health since of a mental disorder. So in other words, there is no mental disorder present. You're not mentally disorderly free from any mental illnesses. And so mental health is very, very important. And you began to talk about how a lot of people don't want to really have that conversation or to even address this area of their life. And it's all because of the taboo, I call it. The taboo that, you know, if you need to talk to somebody or, you know, if something is going on, then you're crazy. And believe it or not, that is actually the thought patterns of a lot of people around the world, especially in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. You know, it's very, very taboo. And I think it's because of lack of information to the general public. And then also than that, it can be embedded within our culture. Because if you look at it, a lot of people, they would tell you that from childhood growing up, a lot of them were not cultured in homes where they were free to express themselves. You're only allowed to express certain things that made your caregivers feel good. But if it was something going on that they did not want to hear, they would discipline you. Or if you cry, they would say, I'll give you something to cry. So for many people, they were not really cultured in an environment where it was okay to express those negative thoughts or those negative feelings without reprimand. And so a lot of people, based on that training, they continue it in their life. They begin to develop as adolescents, as a young adult, as adults, with this notion that anything that's going on that's negative, I'm not going to say anything. And that's why you ask a person, how you doing? And they'll be like, I'm fine, thank you. And then you'll hear yourselves. Mm-hmm. Because they don't think that it's okay to be honest and to be transparent with those things that are going on, especially with something that may be negative.
Which I find quite curious to this extent. If something is wrong with my electrical supply, I go and find an electrician. If something is wrong with my plumbing, I go find a plumber. If something's wrong with my kidney, I find a nephrologist. If something is wrong with my bones, I go find an orthopedic. But if something doesn't mind, then why is it different? You know, why is it different that I'm going to talk to somebody whose business it is to understand how the mind works and what might be the issues confronting, and not feel as if, oh, I'm a crazy person, in quote, because I went to see someone professional?
Yeah, I, you know, and again, goes the general public needing to be more educated. Because like you alluded earlier to those other medical conditions, heart disease, hypertension, is mental disorders. It's just a sickness like anything else, but it just has to do more so with the mind that's actually affecting the emotions, the behavior, or the feelings of somebody. And so I think that if people see it more along the lines as, you know, it's just like any other illness, I think that their response to it will be a bit different. But because they see it as something strange or taboo, you know, it's an embarrassment, or, you know, it's not something that they think that, you know, that they'll be able to do without judgment. So I think we can do a little bit more of educating our people as well and letting them know that, you know, it's okay that you don't feel well mentally, but this is how we're going to help you to rectify that problem. And I think that if we do more of that education, I think that we begin to change the mindset of our people.
And the thing about it is, Doc, and help me if I'm wrong, is that sometimes you're not unwell mentally, but you may be developing unwellness. And so you're going to say, you know, I'm noticing certain something. And then the doctor can say to you, we'll help you address your stress management better, these kinds of things. So it's not that I'm saying that you are mentally unwell, but you could have an evolving illness if you don't take stock of it, just like you could be evolving diabetes if you don't take it in hand.
Yes, I agree with that. A lot of times people tend to ignore. And because they ignore it, it begins to, it gets progressively worse. And it's almost like, I would like to use an analogy of a tea kettle, right? So every tea kettle is designed to have a hole at the top that whistles to let us know, you know, that the water is boiling, right? Mm-hmm. And so imagine a person is bottling up everything. They are in this tea kettle, right? Mm-hmm. But the hole to the top is clogged with something that doesn't allow the water, the air to escape. Mm-hmm. Not only is the kettle not going to whistle, but it's going to eventually explode. And when it explodes, it's going to be a messy situation. Mm-hmm. So what we have happening is a lot of people, their issues to continue to build up and to accumulate to the place where it just explodes. And when it gets, when it explodes, it's a place where they may need at that point psychopharmacological interventions and other interventions, limited to either institutionalization if it gets to that extent. But I think that as humans, we must pay attention to ourselves and we must be very self-aware, self-conscious to the fact that we are able to tell that, you know, I'm having ruminating thoughts. I'm like you said earlier, you know, I'm having very excessive worrying, you know, or I'm feeling depressed, I'm feeling out of it, or, you know, I'm hearing, even to the place where, as if, you know, they're hearing voices, if they're getting limited rest at night, insomnia, you know, we have to be able to take note of that. And also, you know, to be able to seek help, because help is actually out there, but we have to be able to take those steps. And also in psychology and psychiatry, one of the major components to it is also something that we do call basically getting a history from the family. Because sometimes persons, you know, they have signs and symptoms that they may not be aware of at that point. But when you speak to a family member or caregiver, they're able to say, you know, I've observed that, you know, she's spacing out when you're talking to her, or, you know, she's crying more than normal. And so at that point, the account of the family members or the caregivers is also very important as well. So if a person is not self-aware, then someone that's connected to them, you know, that's actually monitoring that their behavior, initiate to the person or suggest to them that I think that maybe, you know, we need to see somebody concerning these issues that you've been having.
We have a very early call on the line. I wanted them to wait, but you know, given the topic we're talking about, we're going to take the call. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Okay, maybe they left us. Doc, I saw this very interesting question in relation to mental health. Is mental wellness happiness?
Is mental wellness happiness? Happiness.
Yeah, some people say, well, you're mentally well because you're happy. Is that true?
Well, you know, I think what they're trying to say is that happiness most times actually is associated with or comes alongside somebody that's actually mentally well. Right. Because if you look at it, right, on the flip side of the happiness, you have depression, you have sadness, you have, you know, those type of emotions that does not contribute or constitute a good mental health. So I can see how, you know, those persons can associate it with it, but it's certainly something that you can actually, you know, put together as, you know, this person, you know, mentally, you know, they are they're in a good mental place. But of course, again, if that person is ever in doubt, they can always, you know, come and see someone and just, you know, have a mental check. You know, a lot of times, I've done some reading a few weeks ago that said that a lot of people around the world, especially United States, they are now just going to see someone just to get a checkup, just to get a mental checkup, just to make sure it's happening that they may not be conscious of at that point.
Yeah, and I've done, you know, they have some wonderful online tests you can do, not any just an average joke. There's some very meaningful Psychology Today tests that you can do that kind of ask you questions that they say, okay, well, we think you may need to see somebody, or everything seems to be fine and what have you. When we come back from the break, I want to ask you about some of those evaluative things, because once somebody comes to you, what are the kinds of questions you ask to kind of give an assessment of what a person's mental wellness is?
Okay, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're here speaking with Dr. Delano Roll. We're talking about mental wellness, mental health, courtesy of Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today. We'll be back after this break.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product at Fidelity. We care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com, visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 for Freeport.
Doctors Hospital's Pharmacy introduces a new spin on prescriptions called Pick Up Now, Pay Later. That's right. You can collect your medications first and pay after. How does it work? Step 1, submit a prescription online. Select a pickup site. Step 3, collect your medication. And step 4, pay online within 14 days. For more info, call us at 242-302-4785 or visit us at doctorshosp.com.
I ain't marsh the car. The lady run into me marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. RSA.com to submit a claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is God Human Radio. Mondays at 9 a.m. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Good afternoon. We're here with Dr. Delano Roll, and we're talking about mental health, mental wellness. I don't know, producer, but I'm hearing some kind of feedback on my side that I wasn't before, and I haven't had anything. So I don't know. We can check that. Doctors Hospital is our title sponsor today, and we're trying to get information relative to mental health and wellness. So, Doc, I was asking, a person comes to professionals like yourself, and want to address something that they think might be a challenge. Okay, what becomes a part of the initial exercise for assessing where a person is? What might that look like?
Okay, so when a person comes in, right, the first thing that we do is we do what we call a psychosocial history assessment or initial intake that basically allows us to be able to ask questions concerning different areas of the person's life. Sometimes we go as far back as to, you know, their early education, you know, what is their highest level of an education. We do family histories, you know, any history of mental illnesses in the family. You know, we find out, of course, before all of that, you know, what brought you here today? You know, why did you come? And then based on their presenting issue or why they're there, it helps gives us some insight as to what needs assessment tools that we actually use in order to help to determine, you know, what's going on with the person. We have something called the Beck Depression Inventory that actually assesses for depression. It helps us to see if there's any depression going on, and if so, you know, how bad is it? Is it minor? Is it medium? Is it more severe? Okay. We also have a psychological distress inventory, a Kessler psychological distress inventory, that helps us to be able to assess for psychological distress within the person. Mr. Lang, even when it comes to substance use, there are assessments that we have that we can administer. One in particular called a simple screening, which is actually a 16-item scale inventory that helps us to be able to assess the level of substance use within a person. So it depends on what's going on with the person. It gives us insight as to what assessment that we want to administer in order to see exactly what's going on. And based on what's happening, then we want to put a treatment plan together for that person to be able to help them to recover from that particular issue. You're muted, sir.
Yeah. Sorry, yes, thank you. I have found even where people are asked about their sleeping patterns, you know what I mean? Because that seems to be some indication of some challenges. And asked about, you know, their eating habits, whether that's changed or not, or that kind of thing. Or their going out habits, you know, have you been over the last, and I notice it's always over the last month or over the last 6 months, over the last year, have you been, have you changed your going out regularly? Are you isolating, not isolating? These kinds of things?
Yes, sir. So to what you talked about with the sleeping patterns and the eating habits, that's very important, because any sudden shifts, movements within those patterns can definitely be a sign that, you know, that something may be occurring. Now, here's the thing. Everyone is different. So you may have a person that doesn't really eat like that, but now their appetite is picked up. Or you could have a person on the flip side who eat a lot and now their appetite is slowed down. So anything that's basically outside of normal parameters of what that person has been accustomed to can actually be a flagging on. So we have that with the sleeping patterns as well. Some persons, you know, they would sleep longer and now they're getting minimum sleep. Or on the flip side, they always get minimum sleep, but now they're sleeping longer. So we have to be able to see, you know, if there have been any changes to the person's eating habits or their sleeping patterns. And that's one of the questions that we do, that we would find out in the initial intake, the initial assessment. All of those are questions that we are basically asked in order to find out if there have been any changes to either aspect of the person.
And I've learned that a lot of times what you're searching for too is, okay, you've had the shift, but you're saying it wasn't something I voluntarily did. It wasn't something I'm dieting or I'm doing something. So you try to get assessment, I understand, of a person's sense of control. Yes. Over these things?
Yeah, so what you want to do is, if a person, for example, has noted a shift in their eating patterns, right? When are you noticing that this is happening the most? When are you eating the most? When are you eating the least? What is happening around that time? You know, are you doing something in particular? Are you in a certain environment? So we want to begin to hone in on that just a little bit more to be able to find out, you know, how we can possibly link this shift into what's happening with this individual. So one thing about psychology, right, is that we depend a lot on what we call self-reported data, which means that it's a lot, it's questioning, whereby we would ask persons questions and they'd be able to give us the feedback in order to establish an understanding as to what's going on. And that's why earlier I alluded to the fact that as humans, we must be self-aware, okay, of everything that's going on around us, in particular, our moods, you know, our actions, our attitudes, our behaviors, so that if there is a shift, we'll be able to kind of speak to it to give the therapist some insight as to different aspects of it. You know, when is it worse? When is it not that bad? When is it extreme? So we can be able to kind of begin to pivot and move towards a better understanding as to what's going on with this individual, at least being able to also find out from the family members, you know, what have you been observing with this person's behavior? What have you been observing with their emotional state to be able to understand that? And so the eating patterns, the sleep patterns is one, but also the behavior of the mood patterns, you know, the roller coaster emotions, as we call it. You're up today, you're back, some shift in your moods, you know. And so all of these things we need to know, and we need to really look at closely in order to have an understanding of what's going on with the person so that we can put proper treatment in place to be able to help them.
Obvious shifts in somebody's behavior or sleep patterns, et cetera, things would, like, you can zoom in on and say, you know what, there's probably something here. But isn't it also true that some of us develop habits of mind, behavior, like, you know, we fly off the cuff in a hurry and just we tearing at people, and this is can be disruptive to forming relationships, to maintaining relationships, and so forth. And while these may not be like indications of some really a pattern of mind or behavior of mind that can be problematic and can be addressed by a professional, right?
Yes, exactly. So, and it's so funny that you said that, because, you know, there are a lot of people who say just that. Oh, this is just me. This is just who I am.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, if it's problematic and if it's creating an issue in the various aspects of your life, for example, in your workplace, in your relationships, in your familial relations, then it could be that, you know, there's something that's underlying that. So as a professional, my job would be then to, you know, to sit down with you and be able to kind of look at that particular pattern of behavior and see if we can get to the roots of what causes that, or what causes you to fly off the cuff, or, you know, and here's the thing, when you do investigation and you're trying to get to the root, Shivago, it's so that sometimes a lot of issues that people are experiencing actually goes back as far as their childhood. Things that have happened in their past, and we call them ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, where persons experience some traumatic events or some stuff within their childhood that they were never addressed. And so as a result, they just continue to move forward in their stages of development with these unaddressed issues that become a problematic factor in their life later on, which then affects their relationships and their interactions.
I was going to go there with you. We're going to take another break, Doc, but I want you to return to this notion, because, you know, we hear this a lot, that the child is for the child is mother to the woman, which is alluding to what you just said. Way back in your history, there's some issue. I want us to go back to that, because my suspicion is that there are a lot of people in with some of those issues. So when we come back from this break, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host, courtesy of Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today. We are with Dr. Delano Roll. We're talking about mental health and wellness. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Doctors Hospital's Pharmacy introduces a new spin on prescriptions called Pick Up Now, Pay Later. That's right. You can collect your medications first and pay after. How does it work? Step 1, submit a prescription online. Step 2, select a pickup site. Step 3, collect your medication or pay online within 14 days. For more info, call us at 242-302-4785 or visit us at Doctors Hospital.
Diversify your portfolio. Chart a course for RF Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns through our suite of internationally invested funds. Get exposure in U.S., Asian, European, and emerging markets without central bank approval. And with financial services leader Morgan Stanley as the advisor of our international funds, you can benefit from RF's global connections. National markets today by visiting rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid. Take a stand, everybody, come take this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, you're not alone, holla if you feel like you make it down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today, where we're speaking about mental health and wellness with Dr. Delano Roll, courtesy Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today and for the entire week of health and wellness shows that we've been doing. So, Doc, I was mentioning that there is an expression, the child is father to the man. You had mentioned how, you know, so many people, whatever mental challenges they might have, might be rooted in their childhood. When we talk about trauma in your childhood, what do we mean by trauma?
Okay, so when we talk about childhood trauma, we're talking about an event that is experienced by a child that threatens their life or their bodily integrity. So we talk about issues such as physical, sexual abuse, molestation, car accidents, even events of abandonment can also constitute trauma, rejection, you know, neglect. And what happened a lot of times is, as children, we are not really taught how to process those things that we perceive. And so based on our perception of it that has not been addressed, we mature and we grow older with the perception that we had based on that initial encounter. And subconsciously, sometimes we can basically act out, you know, based on that particular event that happened that was not addressed.
The world is not safe. People cannot be trusted. I don't know if it's, yes, it's a stable world.
Yes. For example, let me just use an example. Let's just say a child is, and I want to use something that let's just say if a child is left in the cemetery, standing up. Let's just say a child is attending a funeral service, and the child's parents, for whatever reason, accidentally, you know, left them in the cemetery standing up, and then the child is looking for their parents. They can't find them, and then the child starts to cry because the child is afraid, and you know, so if that happens in that child when they are young and they get older, a few things can actually happen. The child could, as an adult now, could think that, you know, I just don't like funerals and I don't know why. Or, you know, maybe my parents or whoever I'm with in a relationship, you know, I can't really trust them because, you know, I don't want no one to leave me hanging, you know? And sometimes we have these feelings or these thoughts, these cognitive thoughts connected to events or things that we experience, but we don't really know the basis or the foundation in which it is embedded or how deeply rooted it is until we are able to really sit down and begin to look back. So one of the things that I like to do, I like to find out from people, you know, as far back as you can go, what is one event that occurred that you will never forget? Because an issue or a problem only affects a person as far back as they can remember it. So you have to be able to trace that particular issue to that place. So if it's at the age of 5, then that's where you go. If it's at the age of 8, that's where you go. If it's molestation and rape, you know, it's the same thing. And then some people, you know, at a point in their life now as adults, some people are still not quite ready to really address certain issues. So at that point, you just continue to build an alliance with them, a therapeutic alliance, as we call it, a relationship of trust for their therapist or their counselor, till they get to the place where they are safe enough to talk about these issues.
We often hear this expression related to what you just mentioned, arrested development. Like, you know, and sometimes you come to see adults, they kind of like, you know, they almost like they revert back to some childhood, teenage behavior, et cetera. What is arrested development?
When we talk about arrested development, we are talking about a stage in a person's, like, okay, it's a stoppage. I would like to say like a stoppage or a blockage of physical or mental development, okay? So a person is not able to move past a certain point in their life. That we would talk about arrested development in that context, because that person is now at this stage and they are stuck and they can't surpass this period. Now, what we'd have to do is go back to that period where the pause occurred and be able to determine why that happened in order to help that person to move past that stage.
Right.
But you made a very interesting point. And there are so many people that are stuck, that are actually stuck at certain stages in their development and they don't even know it. So it's a matter of now having to take that person back to that stage, kind of assessing why the stoppage or the pause took place, and be able to help to work them past that particular stage.
I've heard of counseling centers where they do an evaluation and they are able to say that your mental maturity is at the age of 3, 10, 18, or so forth and so forth, and able to say to people like, you know, this is where you're stuck mental in terms of your mental maturity.
Yes. So basically, what you're talking about is along the lines of psychological assessments and evaluations, psychological evaluations, which also include what we call a battery of tests, okay, that assess your verbal, your verbal reasoning, your math skills, your reading skills, you know, your understanding, comprehensive skills, in order to be able to look at that, in order to assess your IQ, and to be able to understand exactly, you know, where are you seated, when you look at other persons within your age bracket, you know, at which percentile or which area, you know, of do you fit in within that context? So, persons who have those particular assessments, usually you see that a lot in students who, for some reasons, they have like issues in learning disabilities and so forth. You want to do an assessment on them in order to be able to determine, you know, where are they in their development? You know, where are they? You know, why is it that this 10-year-old or this 11-year-old isn't, you know, isn't even reading, you know, on the age of a third grader? You know, you want to know these kind of things. And so those assessments, those psychological evaluations, can be able to assist us in coming to those understandings in order to know how to help the person moving forward.
I once had a conversation with someone in your field, and we were talking about how do you know when a problem is something that requires me to go and see somebody professionally? Like, when do I determine that? And, you know, they were saying, well, if this thing is getting in the way of your normal functioning, you need to go see somebody. Is that so?
Yeah, if it's affecting your life to the place where, as you know, your normal functioning, like you said, is actually being affected, or even if it's something that you try on your own to overcome, but it's just like, it, you know, you just can't do it, and you need, you know, someone else to be able to assist you, it's actually good. And in fact, you know, Shivago, to be honest, I don't recommend to people that you wait until it gets to the place where it, you know, it affects your life in other arenas. Because at that point, you know, God forbid, but at that point, you could actually, at that point, you know, require maybe even pharmacological intervention, which you don't want that. So if a problem is something that it's recurring, you know, you're having these ruminating thoughts, you know, you're having fears, you're having worries, anxiety, even nightmares, because there are a lot of people, you know, who have traumatic experiences or exposure. They always have nightmares, you know, surrounding that particular event or that particular tragedy, or even when it comes to their sense of smell. You know, when they go in a particular environment, they smell a particular thing, and that thing is connected to that event. So there are so many telltale signs that a person requires help, but it's just the person being, you know, being brave enough to say, you know, I want the help, and I'm going to get the help that I need in order to move forward so that the quality of my life doesn't have to deteriorate any further.
We're going to take a break for news talk, but when we come back, I want to ask you to let's look at some specific mental diseases or issues that we are seeing in the country and what people should be aware of and looking out for in themselves and in other people around them. Okay?
Okay.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news and come back and speak with Dr. Delano Roll, courtesy Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor. We'll be back after this news break.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we're speaking with Dr. Delano Roll, who is helping us to navigate this issue of mental wellness and health, courtesy of Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today, and for all of the shows that we've been doing this week on health and wellness. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Doc, I was, before the break, asking if you could help us to know what are some of the more common mental wellness challenges you see in your practice, we see here in the country?
All right, Mr. Lang. So first of all, before I answer, just let me say this, that there are more than 300 different conditions that are identified as mental illnesses, as listed, in the diagnostic manual, for practitioners. Wow. But in the Bahamas, we have quite a number of them that are affecting our people. The first one I would like to mention is that of bipolar disorder. And of course, we have bipolar 1, bipolar 2, which basically is a mood disorder. And what it basically is what we call a manic episode followed by depression. So manic episode is the person feel like, I'm on top of the world, I'm unstoppable, I'm Superman, I can do anything I want to do. And then, after that, it's like flat. Their mood is just completely opposite. So that's bipolar, all right? We also have what we call major depressive disorder, where a person is basically, feels a sense of self-worthlessness. They feel like, they are insufficient. They feel they're inadequate, overly sad, all the time. There's a drag in their mood, even to the place where their appetite and their activities is being affected. You have anxiety disorders. You have what we call the generalized anxiety, where persons just worry about any and everything nonstop. It's just a continuous worrying. Okay. And here's the thing with that, persons are worrying, and they're worrying sometimes even when there's little or no reason to actually worry. And so that can happen. You also have what we would call, obsessive compulsive disorder. And I think that a lot of people would have heard people say, oh, you OCD, right? So obsessive compulsive disorder basically causes what we would say constant and repetitive thoughts or obsessions, okay? These thoughts actually happen with unnecessary or unreasonable desires to carry out certain behaviors or compulsions. That's very important for us to note as well. And also, I mentioned before the break, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is actually a mental illness that's triggered after experiencing or witnessing some traumatic event. So that particular one, you would have persons, car accidents, maybe stuff that happened on their job, witnessing murders, dead bodies, anything of that nature that's a trauma to them that they constantly relive even after the event over a period of time. And of course, schizophrenia, we know that that's another one that's very, very common. And that actually impairs a person's perception of reality and the world around them. Persons with schizophrenia, they would actually have what we call psychotic presentations where, they're presenting with issues where they're hearing voices that nobody else can hear, or they're seeing things that nobody else can see. And of course, social anxiety is another one where persons, they avoid large crowds or social gatherings where they would be the center of attention, all because of the fear, that they are being judged by the persons that are in the room. And so some people, they tend to avoid those heavy social gatherings where a lot of people are because they don't want to feel as if they're being judged. And also, I think that we have to also be mindful of, and I think this is affecting a lot of the young people in our country, especially the women population, the eating disorders, one in particular, anorexia nervosa, where a person is very much underweight and they're very conscious of their weight. They have this preconceived notion that they're fat, that they are unattractive. And so these people take extreme measures to, to maintain a certain weight, but, they are underweight and, they don't eat, just really, really bad with that. And then the other one is bulimia nervosa, where a person, they binge eat and then they vomited back up. in order to maintain a certain body weight. So we have to be mindful of that, because again, we're seeing a lot of that within a lot of our young people. And then of course, you know, as gamers, we like to eat food, right? So binge eating, we have to be very careful about that. A lot of people, they eat excessively to the point where they are uncomfortable, okay? And, you know, that as well can be a concern. So we would have to definitely watch out for that as well. You're muted, sir.
Sorry, do things like alcoholism and drug use, et cetera, do they constitute mental illnesses, or are they contributors? So what? How do we look at those?
So they come under the category of substance use disorders. Mm-hmm. And of course, if it's marijuana, of course, you know, all drugs, alcohol and drugs have mind-altering substances in them that can also cause psychotic symptoms. For example, marijuana, very common, it's a hot topic around. You know, marijuana has so many mind-altering substances within them that can produce psychotic features, again, such as, you could have persons who are hearing voices that no one else is hearing. You know, they're having auditory visual hallucinations as well, delusions. So we have to be very careful with that as well. And where that is the case, we would call that cannabis-induced psychosis. So drugs and alcohol, definitely, it doesn't really agree, you know, with a lot of people and persons. You know, if they use and they use in excess, you know, they definitely could have psychotic features as well.
We have a text here says, great show, stress brings on depression, and depression is a silent killer. Stress also brings on a lot of illnesses, also some medication side effects of depression and suicidal thoughts or dreams.
Yes. So depression is another one that's really bad, you know. And the reason why it's bad is because depression can actually be the doorway to so many other more severe diagnosis and disorders. If it goes untreated for such a long period of time, you know, it can lead to so many other things. And of course, we definitely would want to get to the bottom of what's going on within that person so that we can help them to challenge. Because Mr. Lang, what we've discovered is that a lot of people, especially with the depression, right, and the anxiety, a lot of people, they have what we call underlying thoughts, underlying assumptions, right? Automatic thoughts, automatic assumptions that causes them to basically ruminate. And so they allow, in a nutshell, they allow things to affect them without properly dissecting and analyzing the particular thought. So my job would be to help that person to look at that particular thought that's creating this problem for them and help them to be able to really challenge it. So I don't want you to just believe this thought. Let's look at this and let's see how true this really is, because a lot of people, they are being affected by thoughts that's really, really inaccurate, or really, you know, it's the opposite of how they're taking it. So we have to challenge it.
In fact, I've done some studies and what they say is a lot of times the arguments we get into in relationships happen long before the actual event that created the argument, because you brought a certain framing to the discussion that, and that this framing dictated how you saw the actual event.
Yes. And then we also refer to that as really triggers, some things trigger, you know, trigger responses, or they trigger reactions from people, especially if it's something that actually is embedded in a different incident that happened prior that was unresolved or unaddressed. And so a re-triggering of that at a later period can cause what I would call a compounded issue, because now the person has to deal with the presenting issue as well as the issue that was at the foundation that was never addressed properly.
This person says, Doc, a lot of office jobs we have are extremely stressful and departmental and detrimental to our mental health. Also, women in Nassau that are 5'4" and shorter cause a lot of stress.
Oh,
But workplace stress is an issue, is it not?
Yes. Workplace stress is an issue, and I must say that a lot of companies, HR companies, and I could say, of course, Doctors Hospital as one of them, are actually taking action steps to kind of to address, you know, issues concerning workplace stress, because a lot of times persons, they have the technical skills in order to get the job done, but environment plays a great part in their performance. And persons, for many reasons, more than one, you know, some persons, you know, it's workload. For some people, you know, it's a shortage of manpower. For other people, it's a lack of organization. Some people allow things to pile up, get out of hand, and, you know, and in that particular case, people who are last minute, because you have some persons who say, you know, I perform much better, you know, when I'm up against a deadline, and that's when I'm at my best. But you have to also be very mindful of that, because excessive stress can actually cause you to have issues as well.
Okay. This person says, ask your guest if being a narcissist is a disorder, because my fiance tell me I might be a narcissist.
Yeah, so narcissism is actually a personality, okay, an issue, disorder, where we basically the person, you know, I really know the characteristics of a narcissistic person, one who, you know, we're always right, we're really never wrong. You know, everybody else is the problem except us. You know, we deny our involvement in issues, you know, and we tend to really impose, you know, on other people what we would not want to be imposed upon us. So, again, we have to really begin to sit down and really look at that and determine if a person is exhibiting these type of traits, then where is it coming from and how can we be able to help that person moving forward? But that's a personality issue.
But my understanding also is that, like, almost all of us can demonstrate from time to time some narcissistic tendency, which is a extreme selfishness and what have you. But this disorder of narcissism, that's an entirely different scenario, eh? Because people go run around calling people narcissists all day long.
Yeah, so let me talk. So narcissism, you know, it makes a person to the extreme, right? It makes a person ignore the needs of persons around them. Okay. You know, while everyone may show occasional narcissistic behavior, as you said, right? True narcissistic people frequently disregard others of their feelings. They also do not understand the effect that their behavior has on other people. So when you tell them that this is how, you know, your behavior impacts me or affects me, you know, there's actually little to no regard to, you know, to what you're saying. So it's on the extreme end, like you said, and I agree, you know, occasionally, you know, everyone may have a level of that behavior, but on the extreme end, it actually can be a challenge. And it's actually one of the main causes why a lot of people in relationships actually have issues and it fails.
Yeah. And in fact, my understanding is that there's like what they call overt narcissism and then covert, because you have like, you see some people, their narcissism is so grandiose. They are always the best thing there ever was. Everything they did was the biggest it ever was. You know, I can name some people who people could point to that, but they're very grandiose in their minds. They're the best thing that ever happened. They're the most educated that ever happened.
Yeah. Aggressive.
Ever happened. They're going to build the biggest house you ever saw. They're going to have the best car you ever saw. Their kids are the most beautiful kids you ever saw. And then you have the covert narcissist who isn't that grandiose, but they are extremely insecure, selfish, and narrow in their perspective, but they're not going to come across as that grandiose person.
Yeah, but then, and also, not to mention, we also have what we call vulnerable narcissism, or vulnerable narcissists, where these behaviors are usually the result of some childhood neglect or childhood abuse. Now, the difference with this group is that these people with this behavior, they are much more sensitive, okay? Their narcissistic behavior actually helps to protect them against feelings of inadequacy. So there's some inner sense of inadequacy or some insecurity that's within them. And that narcissistic behavior is actually as a wall to kind of defend them against those behaviors of self-inefficiency.
Right. This person says, narcissist, no one word. I, this, I, that, overblown sense of self-worth.
Yeah. And like you said, the grandiose aspect of it, it is really, it is to that place where these individuals, they are dominant, they are aggressive, they have an overly exaggerated sense of self-importance, and they're very, very overly self-confident.
Yeah. And in your practice, you know, are you seeing certain things manifest differently in men versus women? Like some more of this in the male community, some more of that in the female, or you see like the variety of all the stuff in all of them?
you try to get me in trouble.
Well, I'm trying to help. They say that most men live lives of quiet desperation. And I happen to think that there's some truth to that.
Yeah. So I don't think it really has anything to do specifically with gender, more than it has to do with exposure and development, upbringing, okay, and environment. Because you know, a lot of times I think a lot of people take for granted the importance or the effects of the individual culture or the environment in which a person was developed. Hmm. Because, you know, as children growing up, we actually become basically a byproduct of who raised us, what type of environment we were in. And this is why you would find that in most cases, you can have brothers and sisters, you know, but they are all different. And when you look at it a bit further, Rami raised this one, Daddy and Mommy raised that, you know. So you have to look at the history, the culture, the upbringing of that person in order to kind of make some sense out of some stuff. And that's why a lot of times, even in relationships, you know, it's important that your partner, when you get to a certain place, when you're taking things serious, that they understand your history, understand where you come from, so that they can have some understanding as to your personality and in some instances, why it is the way that it is.
Yeah, so rather, the yes men may live quiet lives of desperation, but it's not because they're men, but because the environments that raise them tend to tell them, don't talk, don't cry, don't tell people, you sound like a little girl if you tell them people how hurt you are and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, and like we said it earlier in the show, you know, and it's so unfortunate. And I've heard parents that told children, shut up, I'll give you something to cry for, you know? And you know, of the boy, the little boy is crying. We say, man, you're a little girl. You're no little girl. Boys don't cry, you know. And so these things we embed into the psyche of our children, and they grow older, and they have these understandings, and they hold on to these principles or these cultural, you know, that were put in them. And so now they become this individual who doesn't speak, who doesn't talk, you know. And even so, when we look at reward, right? Punishment versus reward. We have to be very careful how we reward maladaptive or negative behavior in our children. Because when you reward bad behavior, you are reinforcing that behavior. You're saying to that child, it's okay to do this. You know, if a child just throws a tantrum and we just give them what they want in order to quiet them down, we are teaching them, whenever you want something, just throw a fit, and the world is going to give it to you.
Or they go in the reverse and give you the silent treatment, and so you go and feed them or do whatever they want because they're silent, and now they learn that that's the way to get what you want.
Yes, sir. Exactly. So we have to be very, very careful for that.
This text says, scrupulosity is the religious form of obsessive compulsive disorder, in which individuals are plagued with obsessions surrounding religion, spirituality, and morals. This may include obsessions about sin, offending God, religious or moral failings, and punishment. They are burdened with worry about whether something is the right thing to do, even in trivial matters, and often perform compulsions, including repetitive prayer, confessions, and avoidance. These individuals often fear that sin will result in punishment or unbearable guilt. So they may try to do compulsions around their religion to avoid consequences such as repetitive prayer, confessions, reassurance seeking, and avoidance. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, that actually is a form of obsessive compulsive disorder or obsessive compulsion involving religious and moral obsessions. And, you know, to some extent, you know, that what the Paula said is absolutely correct. You know, they are overly concerned that something they did, thought or did might be a sin or other violation of religious or moral doctrines. And so those persons, they actually live according to that.
You don't have to say it, Doc, but I'm going to say it. Maybe I'm going to upset some people in the religious community. But I do believe that there is a way in which we teach our religion that can impose some unhealthy mindsets on folk. It is not because the religion is a problem, but it's the way it's taught, as that person is alluding to, where this, there was a lady was sitting down on the side of a guy one time in an airplane. This pastor who was sharing this story. And he said, this lady was reading his book, saw a copy of his book, and she looked at him with a very disgusted look on his face. And he asked her why. And she said, you know, because all my life growing up, I knew where I stood with the devil, but I never knew where I stood with God. Because she said the way she was taught religion is God has you dangling over the fire saying you just do something wrong and I'll drop you.
Yeah. So religion really has a lot to do with it. And like you said, how it is actually taught. And so persons, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, religious beliefs are really connected to, in most cases, you know, what the person believes, what their faith, you know, holds to it. And there's so many religions out there now. And so just basically having an understanding that, you know, some people's behavior, you know, is in part connected to those religious beliefs that they hold strong to.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, Doc, and then when we come back, we will continue our conversations around treatment. Once you discover there's some issue, how does that work in terms of treatment? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're here with Dr. Delano Roll talking about mental health and wellness. When we come back, we will continue our discussions. Doctors Hospital is our title sponsor.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You got to go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises its customers in New Providence and the Family Islands that the corporation will commence mass disconnections beginning Monday, March 28, 2022, on all outstanding accounts. And customers who have not honored their financial agreements are advised to visit their local offices to update those agreements as soon as possible. And all customers are further advised to bring their accounts up to date to avoid the disconnection of their water and sewage services without further notice.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand. Stay.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we're talking with Dr. Delano Roll, talking about mental health and wellness, courtesy Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today and all of the days that we've been doing these health shows. If you want to call, maybe you have a question for Dr. Roll. Listen, he's here. You can call at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp us on 439-3043. You know, Doc, I don't mind telling people that I've had discussions with therapists and I have found that the insights you get having those discussions are just so illuminating, you know, because you have a particular way of thinking or you've never thought a certain way before. And then may ask a question or may make a point about what they have found in their research and what have you. And it just kind of, you have that kind of aha moment, right? And so let's talk about what treatment might look like for people dealing with mental illness. Because one of the things I know is early in my life, all the treatments around mental illness came from movies that were absolutely just horrendous about how they were treating people with mental illness.
Yes. So the treatment that a therapist would give a person has a lot to do with what we call the theoretical orientation of that therapist. And with that, I know it's a big word, I'll break it down. So what that means is, what type of therapist are you? Are you a cognitive behavioral therapist, meaning that you are one who, you know, like myself, you know, you are into challenging thoughts, identifying thoughts, challenging them, and then replacing them. Or you are a humanistic psychologist who holds the perspective that emphasizes looking at the whole person and stresses that the person has free will, self-efficacy, and self-actualization. So let's just say if a person comes in with depression, we'll use depression because we've been using that majority of the afternoon. If a person has depression and they come in, what you'd want to do is you'd want to basically begin to look at that a little bit more. One, like myself, I would like to administer maybe a bad depression inventory in order to be able to see the extent of it, you know, how depressed are they? And also begin to look at some of the issues that are actually contributing to that particular depression within that individual, the history of how long it was happening, you know, and to what extent it was actually affecting a person's life at present. So once I discover exactly what's going on with that person, then I put a treatment plan in place. If it's connected, let's just say to maybe an underlying thought or something that the person is having trouble working past, then I would basically begin to look at how we can move this person forward, you know, how we can go back to that thought or that particular issue and begin to help that person, as you said earlier, to kind of see it from a different perspective so that they can be able to move forward. I would reference my work at the COVID Center because I was actually dealing with COVID patients, responsible for the COVID patients at Doctors Hospital when it comes to their mental management. So one of the things that I discovered during that time was that a lot of the persons who were depressed, right, or anxious, it was, of course, because COVID was something that was new, we didn't know initially, you know, what we were really dealing with, but persons knew that people were dying, right? They knew that people were dying. And then to come in an environment where, you know, we are in our white suits, you can't see nobody, you only can identify with voices, your family members can't see you or anything like that. You know, that created a lot of issues for a lot of people when it comes to depression and anxiety. So one thing that I would always want to do is look at, you know, that thought. What is that thought in the mind of the depressed person, right? What are you thinking? What is contributing to this feeling that you're having? And I would tell you that once we were able to identify those thoughts, and we were able to address those thoughts and help the person to replace those thoughts, the depression began to break. And when the depression began to break, persons now were calmer and their body was in a better position to be able to receive the treatment and the healing from the medicine. And so depression and anxiety, they are issues that can really, really cause even a person who is in a medical situation to actually get worse within their status. And so it's very important that we're able to address them.
In that area you mentioned of cognitive therapy, which I have had occasion to do some reading about, they like to talk about cognitive distortions, which is what you were talking about, where you have these faulty ways of thinking that you bring to a challenge or an event in your life, and that causes you to kind of misrepresent your matters. Or help us understand that, what they mean by these cognitive distortions.
Yeah, cognitive distortions, basically, as it says, it's cognitive meaning the way of thinking, the mind, and distortions, things that you may not you're not accurately or effectively able to process, or you're not processing it properly, it is actually distorted. So what we want to do is we want to be able to look at that. What are those distorted thinking? What are those distorted thought patterns? And be able to help the person to kind of see those perspectives from a different position. Because obviously the position that they are looking at it from or they're processing it from is unhealthy for them. It's deteriorating them and it's causing them to be able to not move past. So anything that makes you feel, Chivago, anything that makes you feel bad is not good for you. Right. Because at the end of the day, if the mind doesn't work, nothing else will.
Right. He did something to me because he hates me. That's my thought.
Yes.
He always does this to me because he hates me. That's my thought. Yes. When in fact, maybe the person hates themselves and doing things that impact you, not doing things to you.
Right. And so, and that's it. With cognitive distortions, a lot of times people who have those issues, they see themselves in the victim role. Mm. And everything else that's happening is happening to them. Mm. Those persons are at that point, they are so distorted that they cannot see that particular event from a different perspective on their own. Right. Hence the need for them to connect with somebody like myself or one of my other colleagues who are able to sit down with them, identify that thought, begin to challenge it, put it in perspective, and be able to help them to move forward past that thought. You even have that issue with a lot of people. Even in the dating world, women don't like me because I'm ugly. Men don't like me because my nose is big. So these particular thoughts, these distorted thoughts in the mind, have already been the person has already begun to believe them, and it has become their gospel. So now we have to begin to unfreeze that particular thought, be able to help to introduce some new healthier thoughts within that person, and to freeze those new thoughts into their new perspective so that they can begin to see things differently.
Doc, I have to tell you, I was really shocked the other day to learn that there are basically about 34,000 emotions that could be identified, right? This is what I learned from a researcher. These are the people who did, and I don't know if any of you have ever seen it. They have an app called the Emotional Universe. And you can go on this app, and if your basic emotion is joy, you can press that planet on the solar system, and it'll show you all the various emotions around joy that you could identify. The reason why I point to that is because I'm told that one of our challenges is that we are not able to identify the emotions that we are feeling because we are really only familiar with a couple of emotions. Happiness, sadness, anxiety, whatever. But there are many more, which if you could name it, you can do a better job of helping your health professional understand what you're going through. You're muted, Doc.
I also find, can you hear me well?
Yes, now, yes.
I've also discovered that a lot of people have challenges identifying emotions because they're trying to take the emotions on as a whole mixture. So I like to use what I would call like the count solid separation approach. in a traditional way, you know how we like it with our onions, tomatoes, everything else in it. You have so many different, you know, the herbs in this one bowl, right? So look at every herb as an emotion, right? Or a feeling, right? Being able to separate, put all the onions in one pile, being able to put the tomatoes in one pile, put the kelp over there, put the mangoes over there, put the pineapples over there. If people do that, right, you find that they would be able to kind of better identify thoughts that they are experiencing because they are able to break it down. So when people come to my practice or come to me for help, I oftentimes help them to be able to break down the thoughts that they are having into bits and pieces. Because when you do that, then you're able to understand them just a little bit better. And then you're able to challenge them just a little bit better. So you mentioned a few of the feelings or emotions that people really oftentimes talk about, but there are so many that they don't identify. You know, you have admiration, you have adoration, you have amusement, of course, with anxiety, you have awe, awkwardness, boredom, calmness, confusion, craving, disgust, empathetic, pain, entrancement, envy, excitement, fear, joy. And I'm just naming a few.
Yeah, resentment, disdain, and all these kinds of things.
Yeah, satisfaction, sexual desire, sympathy, triumph, romance. Mm-hmm. There's some horror. There's so many different stuff, you know. And again, I think it has a lot to do with people actually also, you know, being able to read, because there's so many information that's out there now via the internet and different published books with reliable sources where people can be able to read up on emotions so that they'll be able to be more, you know, aligned and in tune with what they are feeling at different times of their life. And once we're able to do that and learn about these emotions, then we'll be able to kind of describe them just a little bit better.
This text says, hey, Mr. Lang, who is this guy? This is Dr. Delano Roll, right? He's a mental health professional. You're a psychiatrist, is the...
No, the psychologist.
Psychologist, okay, that's right. Yes, I sometimes get them mixed up, and so I don't want to do that. A psychologist who's... this is what the person says, doc. So, Mr. Lang, my brother-in-law is a narcissist, a narcissistic person. I will pay to have him see Dr. Roll. He has it very bad. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Well, you, if you can encourage him, Dr. Roll is available to help. This text says, ask him about a person who may say to them, the dress you had on yesterday was nicer than the dress you have on today. Then they will respond, so you are saying the dress I have on now is ugly? Is that cognitive distortion?
Well, in a sense, it could be considered that way. Reason being is because that was your automatic response or your automatic thought, right? So you didn't have to think that way. You could have thought the opposite. You could have thought that the person loves this dress, or the person may want a dress like this. But, you know, you just opted to say, do you think that this dress is ugly, you know? And so, and again, that is an example of how a lot of times, you know, a lot of people really, you know, just fly off the handle and begin to think, you know, in regards to this. Now, if you look even into that particular scenario that you just gave, what is the history of those persons? Is it one that's negative, where the person who is now inquiring is always negative toward the person? So you'd have to even drill down on that just a little bit more before you even could just give a 100% response to that, you know?
It might just be a particular dynamic between those two people as opposed to a personality disorder, some personality set that a person has toward people generally.
Yes. So you'd have to be able to understand, you know, what's going on within that, you know, within that particular dynamic in order to be able to really give voice to that particular question.
Doc, when we're going to take our final break, and when we come back, I want to ask you, please, to give our audience some tips, some guidance about how to go about and or how to address if you believe you might have some issues of mental wellness. But when we come back, I'll ask you to turn your attention to that, please.
Yes, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussions with Dr. Delano Roll, psychologist who is helping us with mental health and wellness today, courtesy Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor. Let me give a shout out to Dennis DeVoe, CFR Doctors Hospital, for being so willing to partner with us in this important exercise. We'll be back after this break.
Doctors Hospital's Pharmacy introduces a new spin on prescriptions called Pick Up Now, Pay Later. That's right. You can collect your medications first and pay after. How does it work? Step one, submit a prescription online. Step two, select a pickup site. Step three, collect your medication. And step four, pay online within 14 days. For more info, call us at 242-302-4785 or visit us at doctorshosp.com.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio, chart a course for RF Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns through our suite of internationally invested funds. Get exposure in U.S., Asian, European, and emerging markets without central bank approval. And with financial services leader Morgan Stanley as the advisor of our international funds, you can benefit from RF's global connections. Set sail for international markets today by visiting rfgroup.com. RF. Money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today for these remaining moments of the show where we're speaking with Dr. Delano Roll, psychologist, courtesy Doctors Hospital, our title sponsor today. We're talking about mental health and wellness. Doc, what can we do on our own, basically, to try and maintain a good state of mind, mental health, and wellness?
Well, one of the things that we can do as individuals is we have to really associate ourselves with positive, healthy environments and relationships and dealings. You know, a lot of times we, as humans, sometimes we find ourselves, you know, in areas or in situations that are overly, excessively stressful, you know, where, you know, we are exposed to greater levels of mental and emotional torture, mental and emotional abuse. We have to try as best as we can to, you know, refrain from such places or such settings. Also, I think that we have to really become more aware of what's going on within us. We have to know what's happening, be able to know whenever there's a change in any of the patterns that we discussed earlier, our moods, our eating, our sleeping patterns. We have to know those kind of things. Also, we have to, for persons who are ill, because one of the challenges with mental illness that I'm really concerned about most times is that of people who are chronically ill, right? Be able to always understand, if you are sick, be able to understand your medical illness. Have regular conversations with your doctors to be able to know, you know, anything that you may need to know. Because one of the things that causes anxiety and rumination is the unknown. When persons don't know, they are left to assume. And so sometimes the assumptions, as we discussed earlier, can actually create an issue because what you're assuming doesn't have to be correct. So being able to, you know, speak to your physician regularly and be able to stay on top of what's going on with you and be able to know as much as you can about, you know, your medications, your treatments, and so forth. And then also, you know, have a conversation, you know, with a friend or a trusted loved one, you know, somebody who you trust. And if it is that you find that, you know, whatever's going on in your mind or your emotions is too much for you to handle, don't be one of the persons who are afraid to come forward and, you know, seek professional help and say, you know what, I need to see somebody because this issue is really starting to affect my life. It's causing my relationship. It's causing me not to perform on my job. It's causing so much, you know, issues for me. And so we have to be able to, you know, to know when it's time to really tag in a professional. But we have to, as best as we can, you know, make good use of our time, be in healthy social environments, healthy social settings, being able to constantly address and be aware of the thoughts and the feelings that are happening within our bodies.
And I found a couple of things, Doc, that has been very helpful to me. Sometimes you feel mentally stressed when in fact you're physically fatigued.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that, you know, if I step back and take some time to rest, take a break from everything, get myself physically rested, all of a sudden I feel mentally better when in fact I thought it was the other way around. I thought it was my mental health may wane on my physical health. But sometimes we have to watch out for fatigue.
Yes, fatigue is an issue as well. We have to get rest. We have to take time to rest. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult because some persons have so much going on, you know, work, school, family, everything else. But you have to be able to get adequate rest. Exercise is also very important to help to burn off excess stress, to be able to ensure that, you know, we are mentally and emotionally functioning. Even when it comes to having a social life, there are so many people that will tell you that they have no time to have fun, or they have no time for fun, or no time for people. So being able to have that balance within your life is just essentially so important, because balance helps you as well to have time where you could actually unwind and just to relax, you know, because a lot of people don't do that. You know, we have so many beaches in the Bahamas. You could just, I mean, pull up on one and just, you know, just enjoy, just take a good one-on-one with nature and just unwind and just relax, you know?
Yeah. I call them comfort moments. Sometimes when I feel it coming down on me, I figured, you know what? I need to melt me some ice cream, crush some cones inside of that, and go have me some comfort food. Just to kind of step back from the crap, you know?
Yes. And then too, I think we have to also be very mindful of social media when it comes to excessive use of technology. You know, I don't think people understand how much mental energy it is to actually move from one app to the next. And then to move from your email to your Gmail, and then move from your Gmail to this mail, and then moving back. That's a lot of mental, energy. And that's not even what you're doing physically. So for some people, you know, they found that having even structure with reading emails, some people read emails 3 times a day at different points. So being able to have a structured, organized life, if you can, also helps you tremendously when it comes to maintaining that healthy balance.
Yeah, in fact, I would challenge listeners to do this. I mean, if you're someone who's constantly on your cell phone, checking your cell phone, checking WhatsApp, checking Facebook, checking this, if you're constantly doing that, I would challenge you to take 2 hours off and say, you know what, no cell phone at all, and watch what it does to you. You almost feel like, wow, where did all this time, where did all this attention come from? Because we are so preoccupied with these buzzes and vibrations and sounds.
Yes. Yeah, you know, and then some people, you know, they do not turn their phones off. You know, some people keep it on. You know, and even think about it. If you are in your REM sleep, if you are in deep sleep, right? And your cell phone just goes off at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you know, your body pitches. So your mind goes into defensive mode. And of course, you know, the Bahamas, in our culture, when we get a phone call at a certain time of night, we want to know who did.
Yeah. That's a problem.
So imagine the anxiety associated with that kind of activity at that kind of time of night, only to know that somebody just saw you online and want to know if you really up.
Yeah.
So we have to put some mechanisms in place, parents, even for their children, to ensure that, you know, that they are taking the necessary breaks that they need, even from the social media and the electronic devices as well, to ensure that they are balancing out.
You mentioned being in a healthy environment, and you know, which also includes that social environment. One of the things that some psychologists point out is how helpful it is for people to have a community of people that can be supportive, sometimes act as a mirror to say, you know what, I'm noticing X, Y, and Z. You know, you may want to pay attention to this. So community is important as well, eh?
Yes, it's important. And then too, we have to be open for the feedback of others, you know, because a lot of people, and again, we talk about cognitive distortions and automatic thoughts, you know, how open are you to someone saying, you know what, I think that maybe you should consider seeing somebody because of X, Y, and Z. You know, how open are you to actually accept that advice from another person, maybe a colleague, a superior, or even somebody in your house? Because I found that a lot of times people in our houses, they're able to give us, you know, somewhat of a better account as to what they are experiencing from us on a regular basis. And sometimes the people who do have mental issues, especially those to the extreme, there are some things that family members identify with that they never even knew were actually happening. So it's very important for us to be able to have that insight from others and also be open to the experience of others, how they are experiencing us in our element.
And if somebody wanted to reach you, Doc, to get some additional information or maybe even organize for a counseling session, et cetera, how would they do that?
Okay, so you would just basically, you could reach me at Doctors Hospital at Centerville Medical Center. It's Doctors Hospital at Centerville Medical Center. That's Collins Avenue and 6th Terrace. The number there is 302-3250.
All right. Well, Doc, I want to thank you very much. You've been very helpful today, help us understand a whole lot. And I trust and hope that people are able to take advantage of the information that was given. And feel free, we'll call on you if you're available, but feel free if you may have something you want to share, let us know. We'd be happy to have you come back.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Dr. Delano Roll, ladies and gentlemen, psychologist, courtesy Doctors Hospital today. Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us. Listen, stay tuned. And tomorrow we're going to look at holistic medicine. We're going to look at holistic medicine. So stay tuned. Join us tomorrow. It'll be the last of our shows for the week. Y'all have a great evening. God bless. We'll be back tomorrow.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.